Welcome to the Automotive Diagnostic Podcast. We're going to explore ways to sharpen our diagnostic skills, find learning resources, and hear from experts in the automotive field. This episode is brought to you by L1 Automotive Training and Keith Perkins. If you're looking for education on module programming, J2534, EEPROM work, key and immobilizer, electrical diagnostics, or drivability diagnostics, Keith has a website, l1training.com, that's got over 60 hours of training videos on all those subjects and more. When I first started out doing mobile, I utilized Keith's videos on module programming and J2534 in order to get my head wrapped around what I would need for the tooling, the computers, the software setups, you know, what kind of obstacles I would be up against when I'm out there programming modules on cars. And it was a huge benefit to me. And I continue to use the training videos that he has on his website. So I strongly recommend checking out l1training.com. We have got Auto Rescue Tools and Isaac Rodell as a sponsor for this podcast. Hey guys, if you're looking for programming laptops, you want the laptop set up ready to go for programming control modules on vehicles, you need key cutting equipment, you need diagnostic tools, Isaac is your guy. Has all that stuff available for purchase, and the support that he offers along with the purchase has been outstanding. I bought some stuff from him in the past. I got my Dolphin key cutting tool from him several years back. And again, the support has been phenomenal. Helped me out along the way with anything additional I needed to make it work for me. So make sure to check that out as well. Again, that's autorescuetools.com. The link will be in the show notes. Hey, what's going on, automotive world? Welcome to another episode of the Automotive Diagnostic Podcast. My name is Sean Tipping, and I'll be your host once again for today's episode. Thank you for joining me. On the show this week, I've got Ben Varnado joining me again. He's been on the show a couple times before, but recently he has ventured out on his own to do some mobile work, and that's going to be the main focus of our discussion, is his experience leading up to that and so far doing the mobile thing. And we'll talk about the ups and downs, the pros and cons, and point out the fact that, hey, this isn't for everybody. It's definitely not the right move, whether it be entrepreneurship in general, but mobile life as well. It's not for everybody. And so if you're somebody out there that's maybe considered it or you looked at it like, hey, that might be something that I like to do, this will be a great conversation to listen to see if some of the behind the scenes stuff is really what you want for a day to day. And maybe it is, but that's going to be the focus of our conversation. So always good to get to talk to Ben. With that out of the way, let's jump in.
that's the thing, is you don't want to tell them to put on two aftermarket sensors. This is a really good shop. They're actually, their lead tech is on vacation right now, which is probably why I was called out for it in the first place. I usually just do programming for them, but if putting aftermarket on there, or if they just put one aftermarket and the other one's OE. But the thing that I just kind of left with was, I didn't know, or I still don't, because I haven't spent the time to read up on it, how the engine computer registers the two MAF sensors. Is it, because there's a bank one and a bank two, and for everybody listening, it's this 2015 Infiniti Q50 with a 3.7 liter dual throttle body, dual mass airflow sensor. It's naturally aspirated. It's running super lean. Fuel trims are maxed out positive. And I went through a bunch of tests and really wasn't able to come up with anything today. But the dual MAFs airflow thing, does it use bank one MAF just for bank two? Or I'm sorry, bank one and then bank two MAF for bank two? I don't see that being the case because it all goes into the same intake. Mm-hmm. And so my guess is it probably adds them together. And that's what I was doing with my calculations. I ran a VE test on it, passed with flying colors, above 90%, tons of power, you know, O2's peg rich when you accelerate, but the fuel trims max out at 30%. You reset them. It actually runs like garbage at first. It's like missing and everything. And at that point, the O2s are lean. They're showing a lean condition until comes back up to 30%. And at 30% long term and like 12% short term, it has fuel control. So then the O2s, their air fuel ratios, they don't switch, but like the downstreams are, you know, sitting at 0.7 and it's in fuel control and it runs good. Like as far as I'm aware of with this Infinity, all kinds of power. But the trims are maxed out and it does set a 171, 174 if you let it run long enough. So yeah, I know that's just one of those cars where I got to think about it. I got to figure out what tests I didn't do. You know, fuel pressure's good. Fuel quality is good. It's not E85. You know, all the other data pits. Actually, this is interesting. I didn't mention this in the chat and I don't think it's relevant, but it's interesting. So there's a MAP sensor on this thing. And I thought I found the problem right away. In the data PID, it reads 2 kPa. That's it. I was like, oh, well, I found my problem. There's no code for it or anything. So I start looking at this MAP sensor, which is on top of the intake. And I use a sensor simulator and I brought it to the correct level that I thought for like idle. Didn't change anything. Like it still was exactly where it was. And so I was talking to the shop. I was like, I think we need a MAP sensor. And they actually ordered one up and we were going to try it. It's a dummy MAP sensor on that engine. It's not used. It's there. There's a plug-in. There's a data PID that you can alter, but it's not used. The other one's a dummy sensor too. It doesn't actually go anywhere or do anything. It's just bolted up on top of the intake. And that I did find very strange, but like I said, I put it at the level where the vacuum actually was in the manifold and it made no difference. And the fact that it's at 2 kPa and it's not coding, maybe it's there for some other application. I don't know. It's very strange vehicle. So
I was just getting ready to say, I mean, they use that 3.7 in so many vehicles. You know, you've got the 350Z, I believe, is the same motor.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, the 370Z.
Right. And I think some of those are turbocharged, aren't they?
I was just getting ready to say they would probably run off of MAP if it was a turbocharged.
Or at least utilize that for, you know, in manifold pressure under boost and stuff like that. So that might be why that's even there. Because I was like, why would they have a harness run with a plug-in and all this stuff? But yeah, it's probably for that application. And so that gets me thinking too, like, what if somebody put the wrong computer, wrong calibration in it? As far as the shop tells me, this is a daily driver of an average customer in a small town, and this just started happening. So that doesn't mean that shady, weird stuff didn't happen to the car. Mm-hmm. It's very possible, but I don't have anything point me in that direction yet. So PJ sent me that TSB that I didn't see that before about engine calibration pertaining to a lean condition. So I'll have to verify that and see where that's at.
And that kids is why you need two forms of service information. When it doesn't show up in one, it shows up in another.
Yeah,
you know?
Isn't that a pain?
Oh, I hate that. Yeah, I've known that for a while. People go, "No, there's no service. There's no TSB for it." And I'm like, "Okay, which service information did you use?" "Oh, all data." "Okay, I'm going to go looking at it in a fix." Yeah, do it all the time.
Nobody ever says Mitchell. I wonder why.
Yeah, we actually we had Keith Perkins here in Austin over the weekend teaching a class. Okay. And I noticed he was using a lot of MotoLogic.
Okay.
But it was kind of nice taking his class because there was some real dummy moments. It's like, dude, why didn't I think of that? And kind of when I said something about swapping the mass airflows on that Infinity to see what just to see what happens. That was one of the things Keith talked a lot in that class. he was talking about looking at ignition waveforms on coils. And he's like, well, you've got a bad cylinder. You know what that pattern looks like on that coil. Well, on the V8, you got seven more to check to compare it to. Yeah. So it just, sometimes you don't think, hey, could I just swap the sensor to the other bank? Or could I, do I have another known good on this car I can compare it to?
Yeah, that's a great thing about anything that you have. Yeah, multiple components on the engine. You got known goods right there.
yeah. And if you, and if it's a mobile job at a pretty danky shop, don't worry, you might even have some known goods laying in the floorboard.
Yeah, that's very true. There's some of these shops I go to that do a lot of a lot of Chevy truck stuff, and yeah, just about any part that you want is there. And sometimes that's to their detriment, because they'll just start throwing injectors and rails on these truck motors, and they're all different. Like every single RPO code for those GM V8 engines are different flow rates for the injectors. So you can't even, and they'll bolt up. They'll fit, they'll plug in, they'll go in the rail, they'll run, but you're either way rich or way lean, depending on which direction wrong you went. So it took one shop like two or three times before I realized, like, stop, just get the right part. You can't, it doesn't work just because it bolts in, but that's kind of the mindset for some people.
I got one shop tomorrow. I got to go do a follow-up diag on one. I've actually finally trained that shop to, if you put the first part on it and it doesn't fix it, stop. Just stop and call me at that point. Because one of my first diags for them, it was a Jeep Wrangler. They had thrown every ref sensor at it. They had now overlaid wires on the harness. And like, when I say overlay, there was like 6-7 overlays. And I was like, dude, where do I even start on this? And actually what it was, there was a harness issue going down the backside of the engine block. And I told them at that point, I was like, yeah, you need a harness. And they're like, there's no more money left in the budget. I'm like, well, you probably should have stopped after the first. I was like, your other option is to pull this engine out. I can tell you at least 5 circuits are damaged in about a 1 foot area. It's up to you, but I would recommend you at this point either put a harness in it or be prepared to pull that engine to where you could open up that harness and inspect every wire in it.
What year was that by chance?
That was a JK, so that was probably about a 13, maybe a 14. It had a 3.6 in
That's really funny.
But it's the big harness going off the passenger side behind the valve cover where it drops down towards the bell housing.
Okay.
The way I figured it out was I went to the 5-volt ref on the crank sensor, which was all the way at the bottom. And as I started wiggling harness, I started getting code changes. I started getting dropouts.
How many volts did you have on the 5 volts, or did you have any?
I could wiggle it to 0.
Okay. Super funny. So 16, we had one today with the almost exact same problem. It was pulling it down to about 3 volts, but that was enough to coat it. But it was the same area of harness that was causing it. So there's the plug in over on the passenger side valve cover, and then it goes down below the valley to the oil pressure sensor and then the crank sensor, and the exact same thing. And they had replaced every sensor that was on the 5-volt reference. Same thing. They did oil pressure sensor. They also did throttle, accelerator, crank sensor, everything that had a 5-volt reference, and it still ended. Theirs was intermittent, which was frustrating, because I at first when they called me, I was like, because I don't really get in with intermittent. They're like, it'll happen like once a week. I'm like, well, when it happens more, call me. But it did. It was a hard fault. And so my guy went out there, and it took him a little while to track down, you know, the area that it was at, but it was exact same thing. And I was reading something about oil from the oil pressure sensor getting into the harness and destroying the insulation. So I'm suspecting that, but they're getting that sub harness. So,
or even like where this was, I even made the comment about possibly a valve cover leak.
Oh, okay.
I mean, dude, you could wiggle this harness, and I mean, codes would just start changing like crazy. Oh, like damn. I even, at one point, got it to set an alternator code. I was like, whoa, I haven't seen that yet. But I mean, they had, when I say they overlaid, they overlaid. It was interesting overlay. They just had overlaid so much stuff. I'm like, you've now brought this whole harness integrity into question.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the worst when they start making way more problems than the original problem. I had a 19 Durango the other day where this was at the dealership, and it was there for like 6 months because they were waiting for a ABS control module, which they put in and it didn't fix it. And then finally the customer had enough and brought it to one of my shops. And they just had this thing just tore apart. This like 19 Durango. It's still a fairly new vehicle. And they just tore the crap out of this thing. And I had to solve 4 or 5 man-made electrical problems before I could even get back to the original problem. Which was just an open wire and ended up being from some rodent damage. By the way, these new Durangos, and I don't know what year they started doing this style, but the body harness inside the vehicle kind of comes down one end of the dash, goes, you know, near the rocker panel, and it goes into this plastic conduit underneath the carpet, and it goes back and it runs across the vehicle under the rear seat and then back up the same conduit on the passenger side rocker panel. And it's in this like very spacey conduit. Like it's not tightly enclosed over the harness. There's a lot of room around the harness. Well, this is an absolutely perfect place. If I was a mouse, that's where I would go. I go under the carpet and into this little channel here, which is just a perfect little mouse home. And so they chewed up a bunch of wires, including one, the ground wire to the brake pedal position sensor, which is why they replaced the ABS unit, because it didn't have a ground to the sensor. And so it couldn't see that you were pressing the pedal, so it wouldn't crank. But yeah, hungry little critters.
Oh boy, the fun stuff we see every day.
Yeah. So you're mobile now.
Yes, I am full-time as of I guess the original opening day was May 1st.
Okay.
But I was already doing some programming on the side before that happened. I think I've heard for over a year now from some of our friends. They're like, you need to make the leap. You need to make the leap. And I honestly had quite a few things happen in like the last 6 months that just made it a now or never experience. Okay. Like, let's give it a shot. A few people knew about this, but whenever I went to Vision, about a week before I went to Vision, my wife was having abdominal pain to the point we took her to the ER. They found a mass in her lower abdomen. Mm. And I was supposed to fly out on Wednesday to go to Vision. Well, her surgery was Thursday morning. So I moved my flight to Thursday, was there for her when they rolled her into the operating room. And I was sitting at Austin Airport when I got the text message, not cancer.
Oh, wow.
And dude, I walked right over to Salt Lake and ordered a big old celebratory Shiner Bock at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, that's great news.
But and it just kind of made, you know, I've been saying, well, I'll do it in a year. I'll do it in a year. I still want to buy more tools and I'll do it in a year. And my wife had been on my butt like, no, not a year. No, maybe 6 months. But everything changed at that moment. I realized that, you know, I'm planning on a year. She's planning on 6 months. And as of a week before that, I was wondering, are we going to have 6 weeks or 6 days still together? So it just made me think, you know, don't put off till tomorrow what you can get done today. And I also, some things changed at my job. So it kind of made it a little less family friendly. And I just finally walked into work one day and I was like, here's my 2 weeks notice. I'm out. And and there was somebody I spoke to at Vision. Me and you had this conversation in private the other night about the guy with that was the parent that was the breadwinner for the whole house, and he had four kids, and he just went out on his own. I met him at Vision, and after he told me that story, I was like, man, I'm sitting here with a wife with a great job, full benefit. I mean, what am I waiting for? And I made the leap. So
what were you waiting for, at least in your mind? What was
I I wanted to be at that point that I thought I was ready. And everybody kept telling me, if you wait for that moment, you'll never be
ready. Right. There's never a perfect moment for so many things like this, especially big decisions. You're waiting for everything to the planets to align. And yeah, it might not ever happen the way that you think it will.
Yeah, and it's been an interesting ride for these few months. I was telling you about Keith's class over the weekend. There was four of us mobile guys on the very front row, so I felt bad for Keith about that. But Keith was telling us about some of the stuff his guys deal with as mobile guys. And some young guy in the class, he saw the romantic side of it like I did in the beginning, hearing the stories of, so you just walked in and cleared the code and charged the shop. And they heard that side of it. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. And one of the young guys goes, well, it must be nice to get to pick whatever you want to work on and only work on what you want to work on. And I was like, guys, it's not that easy. That time you say no might be the last time you ever say no to that shop.
Yep.
So you got to pick and choose your battles.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, you definitely don't know what's coming at you that particular day. You know, it might be gravy work. Mm-hmm. It might be the easy stuff. Sometimes you do get that, but man, you get the complete opposite end of the scale. And, you know, a lot of times, especially after you've been doing this for a while, like in a shop, when I worked in an independent shop, you had the option of saying, yeah, we'll send it to the dealer. Just recommend the customer goes to the dealer, right? Well, you end up being the person who deals with that. Sometimes even when it does go to the dealer, you're the guy that's ended up on that car, you know, or at least presented with that vehicle. And so you get the butt kickers 100%. But I think, and you can tell me what your feelings are on this, is I kind of like that a little bit. I like those cars. I don't want them every single day, but it sure does keep it interesting.
Oh, it definitely does. I mean, you're dealing with a fuel trim vehicle. 3 weeks ago, I was dealing with a fuel trim vehicle. And here it was. I sat here and, I mean, drivability was my thing. Mm-hmm. I came from an independent shop. And to just get my butt handed to me on a fuel trim vehicle, I'm like, come on, this can't be that hard. This really can't. It's fuel trim.
Wasn't that interesting how dealing with, if you're at one shop, one location, and you're just seeing average vehicles, like I worked at a Firestone. What'd you say? You worked at like Christian Brothers or something?
I worked for Christian Brothers,
So you just see average vehicles in there. It's not necessarily a diagnostic specialty shop. At least ours wasn't. Mm-hmm. And so you're knocking out those fuel trim issues because they're all kind of the same. Oh, another MAF sensor. Oh, another vacuum leak, right? But now, when you get a fuel trim issue, maybe it is one of those simple ones and those are just a breeze, but then you get these ones that are just like this infinity that have them like, I'm out of tests. I don't have anything else to check. where am I going with this thing? And you get those. And so your confidence and your skills can erode sometimes.
Well, I bet you've kind of played the same game I played at the shop. You got to the point where you could look at the car, kind of almost look at the customer's symptoms, and you've got it probably 50% diag before you even put the key in the door.
Yeah.
Chevy Cruze, check engine lights on, no drivability complaint. Okay, yeah, it's going to need a valve cover. It's got a 171 code. It might need the intake too per the TSP. You know, stuff like that.
I had an F-150 the other day, and I will say in this shop's defense, they lost their master mechanic and they just have guys that do like tires and brakes and oil changes. That's it. So they don't have anybody with like any diagnostic skills. So I'm not bashing on this shop. They're in a tough position staff wise right now. But so the guy calls me. He's like, hey, we got the 750. It won't crank. We tried putting a starter in it. So if you could come out and check it and whatever. So I get there, I get the keys. He's like, yeah, by the way, the truck will roll away if you let the parking brake off. I was like, okay, all right. I have a feeling I know what direction I'm going. And it was the shift cable was all screwed up. And so it was in reverse, but it showed it on park on the dash. And so, yeah, like those are the sort of things you just like, All right. I know where I'm heading with this one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I was telling somebody the other day, so where the Christian Brothers I worked at, it was in Austin Metro. So we had emissions. And if that check engine light was on, I used to tell people this all the time, if that check engine light's on and it's got four codes in it, probably two or three of those codes are related. Mm-hmm. And the other one's just a strange oddball. Where now I'm doing my mobile stuff in a county that doesn't have emissions. Mm. So now I'm getting to that car that has 12 codes in it. And their complaint is a lack of acceleration. And you're going, where do I start? Yeah. I mean, the fuel trim one I had the other day, one of my friends from Austin came to help me because I'm like you. I'd ran out of tests. Uh-huh. I had no more direction. And it was like a 05 F250 with a 5.4. And their only complaint was lack of power when accelerating. So while they're moving cars, because we parked it on the back 40, I just scanned the codes and I'm like, okay, lean bank one, lean bank two. Okay, wait a minute. Now I got like six transmission speed sensor codes. Mm. I'm going, all right. Oh, and then now we have a throttle body correlation with mass airflow sensor code. And I'm like, where are we starting with this? Are we starting a transmission issue? We have an engine issue. Where are we going with mm-hmm. this? And then you get into the next problem me and you run into, and that's the man-induced or part problems. Yep. And that was when I remember that one because it had a V. It's along the same lines of what you're dealing with, except I had a VE of like 77. Mm. But, you know, O2 sensors max out, under wide open acceleration, just lacks power. I noticed brand new cats, brand new O2 sensors. I thought was a new throttle body and a new mass airflow sensor.
Okay.
So I told him at this point, I said, why did you put the cats on it? Well, the customer wanted them. I'm like, okay. Did we test them or anything? No. We just put them on. Okay. So that's what we're dealing with here. And I told him, I was like, well, do me a favor, do the back pressure test and give me the results. I get a call back a couple of days later. We took the O2 sensors out. It ran better, so we put a muffler on it. And now we put the O2 sensors back in. It runs bad. I'm like, what a back pressure test. All right. And to this, I mean, this truck, the timing chain was slapping. You were scared to do wide open throttles because right. I was like, dude, we're going to holes in the valve covers. Uh-huh. And I think in the end, we told them, look, we don't really have much direction, but we do know you have a foundational timing issue. And we need to start there before we can continue testing. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where we left it at. And honestly, I had no more direction to go into. I have nothing.
Yeah, it's tough to polish some of these turrets, man. And the state of the used car market right now, I think you're seeing a lot more people that are desperate to keep their turd going, right? And they've mm-hmm. let all these problems pile up for one reason or another, or they buy it that way or whatever it is, and now they want it, you know, fixed or drivable. And yeah, you got to kind of sort through the weeds of all of these different problems that have accumulated over several years, if not decade, plus what a shop or a customer has built into it. And so that's a whole skill in itself, is just trying to identify exactly what the customer's after and what's causing mm-hmm. it. And communication can be a big deal there too. It's just like knowing why exactly did the customer bring this car in and what exactly do they want fixed on this O2 Buick Century? Because I guarantee it's not everything. mm-hmm. yeah. They could go buy a new yes. car if they want everything fixed. So what specifically are we after on this vehicle to make them happy and get mm-hmm. them out the door? So that communication piece is huge, but, I don't want.
Yeah, and I guess I see what you mean, and that was my biggest issue with that shop was expectations and being new to the business. You're trying not to burn bridges. You're trying not to piss people off. And at the end, the first mistake I learned was on the very first IAG I went on for that shop. I didn't set the ground rules and expectations correctly, mm-hmm. and I feel like if you don't set that early on, you're going to pay for it later.
It's tough, and way tougher to backpedal.
Yeah, and in the end, I mean, I don't think I've went back to that shop. Personally, I actually have their number programmed in my phone, so when I see it, I probably won't go back, because that new throttle body turned out to be an electronic throttle body rebuild kit. And I'm going, a what? And they're like, you've never heard of those? I'm like, no. What is that? I mean, they're like, oh, it comes with new motors and sensors. And I'm like, oh, that's not asking for a problem.
Yeah, that's okay if you want to do that on your own personal vehicle. You know, that's something I would do, but boy. Yeah, that's like the old school, the universal oxygen sensors that didn't have a connector on them. Every once in a while, you get one of those from the parts guy. And you're like, what?
Yeah, I used to get so frustrated when I'd have that newer service rider, and they would order one of those in. I'm like, what do you want me to do with this? I mean, I didn't write up labor time for splicing, and I sure didn't write up the labor time to change it back out.
Yeah, right. It's just an oxygen sensor. It'll work on anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. And that's, you know, that's the other issue I run into out here is part qualities. Mm. And, you know, when you tell people you really should get that part specifically from the dealer. I finished up a truck here at the house for a kind of a retail customer that I know. And I get done doing timing chains on this brand new from O'Reilly's motor. It's out of time. I get it done. I'm so excited. I'm so happy for myself. And about mile 8, it starts misfiring. And I'm like, it's weird. Why is it misfiring now? And it just gets worse and worse. And it felt like an ignition misfire. You know, like how when the coils get hot, they start breaking down. Had that feel to it. So I'm freaking out a little bit. It's 108 degrees outside. So I just quickly swap plugs, and it stayed on that cylinder. I did relative compression, so I knew we didn't have an engine mechanical. And you're going to laugh at me about this, but this is the first time I've ever seen this. All four of the injectors on that bank were clicking. Even the one that was setting the code, the misfire on cylinder 4 or 3, I think. It was cylinder 4. Injector was clicking with the stethoscope, but when you put a scope on it, you saw no pedal action. I had never seen that before. Like, I had to reach out to Brandon Steckler. Like, dude, I've never seen this before. I can hear it clicking.
Yeah.
But I see no pedal movement. And I kind of described to him, and he goes, what you have going on is most likely a mechanical binding of the injector. So the injector is actually, it's the ferrous metal is moving so slowly through the magnetic coil windings that it's not actually causing the disruption that we would see as a pintle hump.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I'm guessing the hotter it got, the more it bound just mechanically up. Was binding up.
Sure. Yeah.
But that was the first time I'd heard one click with a stethoscope, but could not see action with a scope.
Yeah, I can't say that I've run into that. And to be totally honest, like once I got a scope, I don't know how much I listened to them anymore. I mean, I did back in the day. That was a definite test. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, next one I get, I'll have to try and see. Because I don't think I've done both. Well, I think it's always just been either listen, or once I get a scope, it's been scope. So I'll have to try the next one I get and see.
Yeah, it blew my mind. I mean, the quick and dirty was just grab the stethoscope real quick and go down on, because I knew it was probably an injector issue. Uh-huh. So let's just go down the rail real quick and see. You know, I guess this goes back to the diesel injector buzz test. It's like, okay, let's see if they're all making the same noise.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And that was kind of what I went through. And it's funny because I actually have an injector waveform on my business logo.
Uh-huh.
And my aunt trying to lay out the logo, she's not automotive. She's graphic design. She wanted to make them symmetrical.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, please don't do that. So you got one going the right way and one flip the other way. Please don't do that. I was like,
Things are not working well in that engine if that's what's happening.
I was kind of jokingly with her, but I was serious. I was like, you do realize just off the ground side wave pattern, there are people that can teach a 1 to 2 hour class just on that waveform. Mm-hmm. And she was like, really? There's that much going on? And I was like, oh gosh, yes, there's a ton going on in that mm-hmm. pattern that you have to pay attention to. So it was just kind of funny. She just saw it as squiggly lines. And I'm like, oh, no.
Let's make those things pretty.
Please don't do that. Yeah, I was thinking, man, I'm going to get a vision with a backwards waveform. I'll never live that one down.
It'd be a conversation piece because the people that picked it out, you know, those are your people, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I made enough mistakes in the beginning of starting this business, and one of them was with my printing.
Okay.
I'd handed out 50 business cards and 50 flyers, and the reason I kept track of all my shops, and I want to say it was about number 47, the guy started nitpicking my prices. And I think on GM, he goes, well, you're $25 higher than the guy down the street. And I'm like, well, does he come to you? Well, no.
There you go.
Okay. Well, is that worth 25 bucks? And then he did the same thing on Ford. And I just kind of looked at him. I go, same answer. Mm-hmm. And the last comment he made was he's looking at my business card. And he looks at the flyer and he goes, so which number do I call to get a hold of you? And I go, wait a minute. What do you mean? Which number? And he goes, well, the one on the business card or the one in the flyer?
Oops.
And I'm just like, whoops. Yeah, the one in the flyer was wrong. The phone number was wrong. And I guess I was so focused on proofing and making sure the wording and the prices were right that I totally missed the phone number was wrong.
Dang.
So that's mistake number three.
Yeah, I made the mistake of when I started this, I started it part-time back in 2018. And for the first, what would that have been? Let's see, once 4 years that I was doing it, I used my personal number. Because I was only doing a handful of them, you know. It's like five or six shops. I don't need a separate phone for that. Well, now that it's full-time, and I do have a work phone, and I've really tried to get out, hey, this is my new number. Please text this new number. It's 4 years of people, not only with my number, but giving my number out to other people. I still am getting them on my personal phone. So if anybody is starting out on their own, like even if it's part-time, get a work number. And I think there's ways you can do it through like Google where it changes your number. Just do it. Right. Don't use your personal number because these lovely customers will text and call you on, you know, Sunday at 8 o'clock at night to ask you about something or, you know, midnight on a Tuesday, you know, and I block those people, but that does happen. So it's nice to be able to just put away the work phone, shut it off. And so you got to get everybody on that one number.
Well, you're right. I mean, one of the first things we got once the EIN was kicked in, you know, once we had all that part taken care of, we did go get another cell phone. And I did get, you'll laugh about this. So since I was Verizon Business, they gave me basically like a whole home router modem.
Okay.
And I know Don and them looked at it when I showed it to them. I sent them a picture and they looked at me and they go, that's what I got in my house. I was like, yeah, I carry that box around.
Nice.
Yeah, it works, but you're right. I had one shop that I do programming for, I actually worked for. Actually, there's three shops that are that way. I used to work for that I do programming for. But one of them in particular, he calls my personal number. Now, I've not set out some ground rules and been like, dude, I only want you to call my business line. Because he does have a service riders only calling my business line, but he calls my personal. And I'm okay with it. We're on good terms. But then, yes, I did get a phone call on my personal number from a retail customer about programming some keys. And I was like, how did you get my number? And when she told me, I gently explained it to the business. My business name is 4B Automotive Resources. I want to be a resource for your business, not a competitor to your business. So by me taking on retail customers, I appreciate you giving out my number, but by me taking on a retail customer, that's not helping your business.
Yeah.
That's now putting me in direct competition. And I just explained, you know, from now on, just have them come to you, call me, give me the details. I'll give you the price. You can then mark it up and make money.
Yeah. So. What I have found is a large percentage of the time when a shop gives out your number to an individual, it's an individual that they don't want to deal with for a lot of the times legitimate reasons. And they're like, I don't want to handle this guy. Here, call this guy. He'll fix your problem. He'll make your key. He'll program your module. And those are the types of people that have called me. And I've done my best to make it very clear. Like, again, you don't want to come off as a huge dickhead. Like, don't send out my number. Right. But hey, I appreciate that you're trying to help me with my business, but I am a business to business only because of X amount of reasons. And usually you can tell pretty quickly if it's a shop or a person. And so I will ask that my first question after they call, hey, I'm blah, blah, blah. I need a key made. I'm like, cool. Where's your shop? And that's the like for sure answer. So like, oh, well, it's like outside in the driveway at my house. Oh, sorry. You know, I'm only insured to do business. Bring it to a shop and we can help you out there. But yeah, doing individual work, for whatever reason, just the particular stuff that we're doing, there's only been a handful of people that it's been, you know, lucrative to even entertain that option. But the majority of it is just like, I'd rather just deal with the shop. It makes sense for so many more reasons. So that's another piece of advice for anybody who wants to do this is don't think, hey, I'm so desperate for work that I'm going to start taking on individual stuff. I wouldn't recommend it.
No. So I'm fortunate that I actually do have a shop on my property. Mm. And in the beginning, I've got a diesel shop down the street. They get a lot of gas motor stuff. And in the beginning, they were just farming it out to me. And it was nice. You didn't get that call today. So, but don't worry, I got a Dodge out here to put timing chains on, you know, something like that. And I actually had to have a talk with him over the this past weekend. I finished up a job for him and I just told him, hey, I need to scale back what I'm doing here so I can focus more on my mobile side. Yep. And, you know, it's nice when you have people that like that want to help you out in the beginning, but at the same time, I've had some great guys say, okay, well, which one are you going to do? Are you going to be an auto repair shop or are you going to be a mobile program? Mm-hmm. You know, take your pick.
Right.
Many have tried to do both.
Yeah.
It's really hard to do it as one person. And, I just had to think about that and, you know, so this week is mostly building the business more. I still have about 200 shops to get flyers and business cards out to and that are in my area. So that's my number one focus this week is to get to try and increase the clientele base.
Okay.
And that's part of business. Yep. And, you know, you brought up a good point about asking a retail customer where their shop is. I have to word that slightly differently out here in Texas because everybody has a shop.
Mm, okay.
And I've already had one incident where I said, where's your shop at? He told me. I got to it and I'm looking around going, well, where's the cars at? And he's like, oh, we actually own a transport business. We usually have semi trucks in here. This was his own personal truck. He had put a new Allison transmission in it and it needed to be programmed.
Okay.
And this goes back to finding out where is their shop, maybe even doing a Google on it real quick.
Yeah.
Because I had to tap into their Wi-Fi. I had no internet whatsoever where I was at. And I had to tap into it. Ended up costing me a pair of Oakley sunglasses. I'll probably never get those back.
Just leave them in the truck or something?
I think so. Well,
there's a trade for the Wi-Fi.
I've always said the best lessons in life cost me cash or blood. So this one costs cash. I got back in the car and went to put my Oakleys on and I'm like, oh crap. And I got out, walked around and I asked them and they're like, no, we can't find it. And I was like, oh, well, and they're gone. But that also, the other thing I've found that's been more beneficial dealing with shops versus retail customers is, when you're talking to a shop, they maybe understand 50% of what you're telling them. Maybe, if you're doing good. When you're dealing with a retail customer, if you're lucky, they understand 10% of what you're telling.
Eyes glaze over. I know that feeling very well. I'm like, why am I even still talking? And it's not like a, hey, you're a dumbass sort of thing. It's just, they're so far removed from our world that the basic concepts aren't even there. So explaining it in the detail that we're going into, there's no point, right? I could be spitting nonsense and they just be like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean there, but the scary part is when that's the shop. That's when I'm just like, you shouldn't be doing this as a career.
No. And you know, as Tommy, I think mentioned on one of your podcasts that you're going to start to feel bad because you look at some of the shops that you're like, this place should go out of business, but I'm probably the reason why their doors staying open.
Yep.
And, I've got a couple of them that are that way that I'm just like, y'all really need to just go out of business and let them make room for somebody else. And I hear the same term in all of those shops, and I can think of at least five that I go to that are that way. And the one term I always hear is, well, we're just helping the customer on this one.
Yeah, right.
And usually what that to me is the code word for either we're not charging them, or we're not marking up what you're billing us. And it's like, you know, in a real business sense, you buy the product for a dollar, you sell it for two, and that's how you keep the doors open. And yeah, I'm starting to have that feeling now on some of the shops I go to.
It's
like,
should I just
let you die in peace? Or
it's eye opening, and sometimes you have to make that decision, and not with the intent of I'm going to screw this shop over, but there are just some situations where you know what you are doing or trying to do for that shop isn't helping anyone. It's not helping you. It's not helping their customers, even though the shop might think it's helping them. It's not. And I had to fire a shop recently that I'd been working with for a while, but it just, you know, I try my best to encourage them to like, you know, hey, you should get some service information, or, you know, because they don't have any, or hey, you should get an AC machine, because they keep calling me for AC diags, and they don't even have a gauge set. Why are you even attempting to do this? But again, they're so far removed from the level where they need to be. And that shouldn't be a professional repair shop that's charging people. It shouldn't be. And there was a number of reasons why I was just tired of dealing with it. I have so many other more lucrative opportunities to help legitimate repair shops really genuinely help their customers in an honest and professional manner that I want to go that direction rather than the opposite. And so, and it's tough because at least for myself, I don't consider most of these places, like these aren't complete assholes. I don't feel like they're bad people. Oh yes, those are out there, but it makes me feel bad to just turn somebody down and say, you know, almost like I'm arrogant about it. Like, no, you don't deserve my help. But it's not what it is. It's just sometimes as a business owner, you got to make those decisions.
At Christian Brothers, we had a term that, you know, sometimes somebody is not your customer. I'm having to learn. And dude, that is a tough and hard decision, especially early on when you're like, you know, there's been plenty of shops I've walked into that I'm like, I don't want to be in this shop, but you know, you power through it.
And it's tough because when you're new, it can be like a proving ground for you. I had a couple shops like that where I'm like, okay, I can come in here. Like I'm still figuring stuff out. Hey, maybe if I screw something up, it ain't that big of a deal because they're screwing up stuff left and right. Like, this is my, like, where I'm going to cut my teeth sort of thing. But then the problem becomes is, now that's part of your business is serving that shop. And as you want to grow, you're severely limited if that's your customer base there. So you have to kind of think big picture when you're making those calls.
I was going to say one. So when I first started handing out business cards and flyers, I got really, really happy about the shops call. I was like, oh man, I got a call. Yeah.
It's a good feeling.
And, it's a great feeling. And I will say we have this one friend that he's very straight and blunt on his comments, and he thinks about it afterwards and he's worried he hurt your feeling, but you really need those blunt comments. But he made the comment, he's like, be prepared. Some of these shops that you have in the beginning in 60, 90, 180 days, they might not be your customer anymore. Mm-hmm. And I've had to keep that in mind. Like, you know, some of these shops that, you know, I'm super stoked to get a call from them, they might not be my customers in a few months.
Yeah.
Either we just don't see eye to eye on something, or, you know, I'm too busy doing programming and helping these other people and they're not calling me as much. And, it, you know, customers come and customers go, and it's a scary feeling in the beginning, because you're like, man, that one time I say no might be the last time I say
yeah.
No. So you got to take them as they come.
And
I just thought it was real funny. Somebody at that class making the comment, wow, it must be nice to get to pick and choose whatever you work on. And I'm like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
You're looking at the romantic cowboy side of this. Not always.
Okay. So in your decision, this is something I was curious about asking you about. Your decision to, you know, go full-time mobile, to not be, you know, in an employee somewhere at a shop, what were some of the biggest factors that drove you to that point?
Honestly, it was time with family. We had something that changed at the shop where basically I'd been told I no longer had personal time.
Okay.
I was now a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week employee. I was like, not really, not when I'm working. Yeah, I will take those hours when it's my name on the check.
Yeah. You
know, not the other way around. And I've been, and like I said in my previous podcast, I've been working in shops since 96. I started realizing I was working for someone else's dream. Like, they had delegated all their personal responsibilities onto me for their dream.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm going to take on these responsibilities, why not it be my dream? And somebody told me in the beginning, they said they thought mobile only had 10 more years to go. And they thought they hurt my feelings when they said that. And I just said, I look at it this way. I got a 50-50 chance. I'm either going to make it or I'm not. And my drive, my networking, my skill set, my determination will skew those odds more my favor. And last time I checked, it was better than playing the lottery. So, you know.
Yeah.
And I would much rather look back and say, I tried, I didn't succeed. I won't say fail. I'll say I didn't succeed and I learned the lesson, versus looking back and saying, damn, wish I would have tried.
Right, you know? Right.
So that's the other main thing. Now, the selfish reason behind it was, I've gotten tired of putting in engines and transmissions.
Mm-hmm.
I got tired of doing that kind of work. And you can only do so many 5.3 liter engines before it just becomes monotonous, like factory style work.
Yeah.
And the programming was still new to me. So it still quenched that thirst for, I want to know why.
Yeah.
I want to do something new. And I've learned more about programming in the last 3 months than I probably have in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Just because of doing
the diagnostic thing too is, yeah, it's learning on steroids 100%.
Oh yeah. And you know, it was one of those things. I had already started acquiring equipment for this decision. But you know, like I said, I wanted to be able to get off at 5 o'clock, at least see my kids. And then, okay, well, they go to bed. All right, now I got to go back out and work. You know, I've got to brush up on my skills. I got to make sure my software is up to date.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord, which server crashed today? you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. Right. And but that was, honestly, it was personal. It was family. I felt like it was time. All those things went into the decision making. to go mobile on my own. My wife was adamant. She goes, I do not want you to open an auto repair shop. Personally, my heart wasn't in opening an auto repair shop, but at least with the programming, it was still new. It was still fresh. It was still that thing I wanted to learn. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, you probably had times like that in your career where you're like, gosh, another brake job.
Yep.
I could do this with one hand behind my back and an eye closed and possibly even the flute.
Mm-hmm.
But man, this Diag over here, that, you know, I haven't done one of these in a while. This is kind of fun and challenging.
Yep.
That's how every day is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's
literally how every day for me is.
Yeah. The parts hanging did get that same way for me. It was just, like a factory worker. When you're doing wheel bearings and brakes and ball joints and good money, but it's not stimulating me in any way. Right. I could mm-hmm. pop in my headphones and listen to a YouTube video or a podcast or something and be completely focused on that. And my hands just do the thing and get the mm-hmm. brake thing safely. Like I wasn't leaving bolts loose. It was just literally that much autopilot, 'cause I'd done it hundreds and hundreds of times. And so you're not engaged.
You're not
with that. Mm-hmm.
You're not challenged. Yeah,
you're not challenged. No. I mean, maybe a bolt breaks every once in a while, but I don't know. That's not the kind of challenge I want. So, this side of things, it changes that dramatically. Like, you know, 2 days for me doing this, I don't think I've ever been the same. Like, okay, the programming can become that, right? If you've done 100 6080s, the next one ain't going to be that much different. Well, GM server might not work, but the programming, okay, we'll click here, we'll click there. But even with that, it's changing all the time, right? They change their setup. You have to figure out this new software. This browser doesn't work today. Oh, it doesn't see my VCI today. Oh, I can't have this software on this computer. So even with that, there's mm-hmm. obstacles, there's challenges. But I think for me, it's important for me to offer various services too. Like ADAS is mm-hmm. that new exciting thing for me right now that I'm learning as I go. And it's I remember the first time I did an ADAS calibration, I bought my equipment this spring and I had that feeling like I was actually like my hands were like shaking a little bit when I did it, like going into a shop and doing it. And that was like how I felt the first time programming. I remember the very first time I programmed a control module for a shop, it was a GM fuel pump control module on a Chevy truck. And I had that same feeling. I was just like jacked about like doing something completely, you know, outside of my normal thing. I was like, yeah, I want to do this. I want more of this. So that's I totally understand what you're saying, chasing that feeling.
Yeah, and the weird thing, and it's funny to me because from the outside looking at the other mobile guys, I saw that romantic freedom, like, oh, that's a cool, sexy thing to do. You tell the shop exactly how it goes, and you just walk out with a check. And now that I'm actually doing it, I do want people who are on the fence to realize, I mean, it's not all rainbows and unicorns every day of the week.
No.
It's really, I mean, you have days that everything goes as smooth as glass, and then sometimes guys will call me and go, how's your day going? And the only way I can respond to them is smooth like sandpaper. I mean, that's...
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's not going good today.
that's the problem is you can have a day like that where every single thing you touch and some things that even you didn't touch are going to go to crap, and there's nothing you can do about it except for push through and grind through and figure out how to get to the next day. And that's an important point to bring up too. Yes. The image of the mobile programmer, diagnostician, whatever it is like you say, a sexy, you know, it's romanticized when we look at it in a YouTube video or a Facebook post or whatever. Like I remember watching Keith DeFazio's videos. I'm just like, that dude is so goddamn cool. You know, I want to do that. I want, you know, and this isn't to discredit Keith. He's an incredibly smart person. So he probably didn't have too many moments where he, you know, at least at the point of his career was he was making those videos. He was able to slam through those cars, but like you don't necessarily see all of the ass kickings that you're gonna get and the failures that you're gonna have and the shortcomings that you definitely have, that I definitely have when I get out there, and you're just gonna have to work through that. But I think you got to be honest with yourself to say, hey, can I look at the big picture and actually appreciate those things too, right? The things that challenge me and things that are difficult for me. Can I be honest and say, yeah, these are good for me in the long run if I can push through them? And then it's even that is a good part. And I welcome it to a point. I don't want all my days to be shitty, but the ass kickings are good in the long run because they make me better down the road.
Well, I will tell the one stereotype about the mobile guys that I didn't understand in the beginning, but now I'm starting to understand it, was a lot of the mobile guys, you realize that they only sleep about 4 hours a night, five hours a night.
Kidding.
And I was always wondering, like, I would hear my private chats going off at like 2 a.m, like, dude, it's a Wednesday night. What are y'all doing?
Talk about fuel trims.
I now know what 2 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday night looks like. I mean, I joked with my wife about it. I call it the programmer's sleep schedule, because there are nights where you're up till 11, 12, 1, 2 in the morning. Yep. Man, I just got to try and power through this module. I got to figure this out. And,
yeah. Get that software set up on. Why won't this thing, you know, this software work on this laptop? Why can't I download this file?
Yeah. Yeah. And see, that's also been my biggest problem, is I never was a PC guy.
Me neither.
I just never was a laptop guy. And I'll never forget battling for 3 days and just being so frustrated with Chrysler. Why can't you release this laptop? It's already preloaded, ready to go. And then loading it all onto a new laptop. And 3 days later, I'm still going, why is this not working? And, you know, a buddy team views in 10 minutes later, we think we got it. And a week later, we find out we don't got it. You know, it's, you have those challenges like that.
Did you get your files downloaded the other day?
Yes, I did get them taken care of. Yes. Thank you to Matt Wallace. Absolutely. Dude, that guy's awesome.
Nice.
He spent quite a while working. And if you asked me tomorrow and said, look, I'll give you $1 million to redo exactly what he did, I'll be like, just go ahead and keep it. Let's not waste both of our time. But yeah, I've got a membership to L1. So I've watched the videos. Matter of fact, I've watched the videos while I was trying to set it up. But it's just that unknown variable.
Yeah.
We run into it as mobile guys, we run into it out in the field. I tell, before I program any module for somebody, I always tell them there is a risk of something happening. And I just want you to be aware of this risk before we proceed further. Mm-hmm. And I heard myself say that to a shop today when I programmed a fuel pump control module on a GM. I told him that, and it made me think back to about 10 years ago. I used to enjoy doing window regulators. I don't know why. I just did. I like doing window regulators. Sure. Back before they were the ones that attached to the big door panels.
Uh-huh.
You know, while they were still easy.
Yeah,
good stuff like that. And I remember an old guy saying, well, how many windows have you broken? And I go, I haven't broken any. He goes, well, you haven't done enough yet. That's the way I feel about modules. It's like, how many have you bricked yet? And you're like, done. You haven't done enough yet.
Yeah.
So I still have that fear I still have that weird feeling on a few of them. Like, should I hit enter? Should I hit enter?
Yeah.
Don't cycle the key back.
Right, right. Well, I mean, yeah, you've got a good network of people. So that's a good feeling to have, is like, okay, something screws up. I got some people I can call, some people that'll help me, some ideas. Maybe just someone to say, hey, it's not the end of the world. You got a paperweight. Mm-hmm. Go get another one. It'll be fine.
And I'm going to tell anybody listening to this, a mobile guy is only as good as his friends.
Yeah, I agree.
Make friends, make good friends. You know, we always talk about in the automotive repair side, it's getting to the point where one person can't know everything. I think in the mobile and the programming and the Diag stuff, I can only think of probably one or two people I would consider close to knowing everything, like the Google. but the rest, you know, and we have a small network of friends that I'm in a private chat. And it's funny because one of the guys has never worked in an auto repair shop, never worked on cars before in that style setting, but yet dude is a master of modules.
Okay.
But yet when it comes to drivability, usually like he's calling me or one of the other guys in the sure. group because that's what I bring to the table. And that's kind of how this works. You, if you're thinking about doing this, find out who your friends are and start building that network around mm-hmm. you. Because I can tell you right now, as awesome as I could have bragged about myself, I wouldn't be 75% of where I am without my network. I really yeah. wouldn't.
Same but here.
Having that network around, I mean, I hope to one day to be able to contribute as much as they're contributing to me. But at the same time, dude, these guys have been doing this a while. It's ever changing. It's fast moving. I mean, by the time you think you got it, a server crashes.
Right.
And
well, it's yes. Some of these guys have been doing it for like 10 years. And you think about, mm-hmm. again, like what we're doing and how much we're learning on a daily basis compared to what you were outside of this. And you right. just extrapolated that out over a decade and they're just light years ahead of you when you're just starting out. And so, yeah, it is tough sometimes to be like, boy, what can I actually contribute to these people? But yeah, mm-hmm. you just got to keep pushing along. And even if, you know, you just one little thing here or there, you know, that's helpful. And then kind of pay it back to the, you know, people coming up behind you too, I guess is the way that I look yeah, at it.
What's crazy is I can tell by how much the Facebook message ping goes off. I can usually start to judge how fast and how quick it is. I need to look at that. I think a server just crashed.
yeah. Because
when it starts pinging about every 3 seconds, it's like, oh crap, what server just went down? And a funny story, one of my first shops, it was a nice shop out in the middle of nowhere. I introduced myself to him, and the guy asked me, he said, how much do you charge for GM transmissions to program them? And I gave him a price, and he goes, well, I got three of them out there. And I looked at him, I go, three? You got three? And he goes, yeah, I got three of them to go in, three Jasper units. And I kind of made him a deal if he would have all three of them ready to go at one time. Mm-hmm. About a week later, he called me. He had all three of them ready to go. And I get out there. I programmed the first one. I unhook my stuff. I walk to the next bay, and the GM servers crash. I'm like, man, my first time coming to this shop, this is amateur hour. And I actually gave him the option, and this goes back to your networking. I had people in Austin that had aftermarket tooling where we could have cloned the modules. Sure. And I gave him that option. I said, if you want, I'll make a run down to Austin, borrow one of the tools from one of my friends and come back and I'll clone them for you. And he just said, nah, let's just wait till tomorrow. Maybe the server will be back up tomorrow. So he understood, but that also goes into having your network. Yep. I mean, it's really, if you thought having that triple bank Snap-on toolbox full of tools in a shop, that going mobile, you wouldn't have to have that much. Au contraire, mon frère. That's why these guys drive vans.
yep.
I mean, you've seen the picture of my 2001 Honda Accord. I have to organize the trunk just right so it'll close. And even then, I haven't even started getting into the module cloning yet. That's been my other thing this week. We had a good week last week. Uh-huh. And this week, we're going to start purchasing some cloning tools just to have for backup when servers go down or, you know, those people are trying to use module route. Like, I got a call for doing a computer in a 08 Saab, a PCM, mm-hmm. that I think I'm going to end up just cloning it to the new
okay.
one.
Okay. Okay.
So
was that an E module on that one?
I think one of the guys told me it's an E55.
Okay.
And I think I can use a PC tuner or PCM tuner, or if you really want to hit the lottery, we could buy, I think it's KTAG does it, or
Oh,
KESS.
okay.
Or no, I'm sorry. Yeah, one of them does it.
That's the tough part is like
Either
which tool does what? I have no clue.
Oh. So are you having the same issue I'm having, like coming out of a shop? If somebody says, well, that's an E59 GM computer, I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll go with you on that. But I'm looking at him going, okay, what computer is going to go in this 05 GM with a 5.3 liter, two-wheel,
Sure.
that I'm used to ordering parts by the model of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm looking at these cloning tools, I'm seeing these list of modules and I'm going, I have no clue what these modules
Yeah.
are in. Like,
You get a feel
that's the hard part for
it,
me.
yeah, it is. You get a feel for it more as you do it. Google's your friend there, obviously. The on for those specifically, the GM engine controllers, if you look between the aluminum fins, the E number will be there. It'll also be on the tag on the back, but sometimes the tag on the back's gone. So you look between the fins, it'll say E78 or E87 or whatever it is for that for those in particular. But yeah, the number correlations and which number am I using to match to this one, it's crazy. But that, yeah, we deal with that all the time. Repair
But
Link Shop is your friend. That's huge in figuring out a
yeah.
lot of the stuff. I'll use Car Dash Parts sometimes to try to sort through. They actually have a pretty good organization of part numbers when you're looking stuff up and what application goes to what. It's not half bad. I wouldn't rely on it 100%, but for a quick lookup, it can kind of help you gauge what parts you might need for what application.
And you know, the tricky part about going from a shop into the mobile world is there is stuff that I'm doing now that we would have never thought about doing in a shop. Like, the other day I got called out to a shop. He understood it was going to be a less try, but it was a 98 Silverado 1500 with the Vortec motor. The VATS module had failed and it was obsolete. And he's like, truck won't run. And I said, well, let me see what I can do. I think I might be able to put it on the bench and get rid of the security system and the PCM. And sure enough, I brought the black box EC, the black box PCM home and benched it. And I actually put it on my Facebook page as kind of a joke. How much do you bench, bro? And
That would be a
but that
great
was my
t-shirt. You got to make that. That is fantastic.
That honestly was the, I had done one module before on the bench, just read it and see if I could do it. But that was the first module I'd actually read, altered, and pushed back in on the bench.
Nice.
So it was kind of an exciting day. Just whipped out that Go Diag that I've owned for like 3 months now and hooked it up and
Yeah.
used a little HT tuner action and made it work.
Yeah. When people call me for BMW footwell modules, and then I ask them, like, well, did it fail after a battery disconnect? Because they ask me, can you program one, a new one? I'm like, well, I can, but how did it fail? I was like, I can fix that old one for you. You can fix it? And that's the thing. Like, people, and myself included, like, go back like 3 years ago. I didn't know that was a thing. Of course, it doesn't communicate. Get a new module, but some of this stuff now, yeah, there's all are different methods, and that again is credited to the incredibly intelligent people that I've met along the way. Because otherwise, how would you know about something like that? I don't think if you gave me 100 years, I don't think I'd figure out how to fix a BMW footwell module on my own. But somebody did, and now I can utilize that as a tool of my business. So having those people in your corner is massive.
And it's yeah, it's and that brings up another point about going mobile is knowing your market area. I know a lot of my mobile guys were talking to me about building up my Euro packages, and I know my market area. I actually worked as a tech in this market area. I'm like, dude, the few and far between Euros that are here in the area are third and fourth owner clapped out 7 Series BMWs. So I haven't started tooling up much for the Euros yet. I think the only one I've turned down was somebody called me about doing an FRM module on a Volvo.
Okay.
Yeah, but I was like, look, I don't have Vita. I don't have any of that stuff set up yet. And I just kind of graciously bowed out. But
do you have an iScan?
I do not have an iScan.
Put it on your list. You don't need to buy it tomorrow, but that needs to be on your list. That is such a phenomenal tool for the guy who doesn't own every Euro tool, which is me. Mm-hmm. It fills the gaps and is quite impressive. And then you have some support on demand programming. It belongs in every mobile guy's van, in my opinion.
Oh, dude, I was actually talking to a shop today about the iScan. They were the shop I did the GM programming for. He said, you know, he does his own Ford and GM programming, but his Snap-on Pass-Through Pro bit the dust.
Okay.
So that's why I got the GM programming from him today.
Nice.
But he was talking to me about Euro stuff, and I'm like, look, there's only two Euro shops if you don't count the dealerships. And yeah, we're on a military base, you know, so they're clapped out. But you're right, I do need to look into the iScan. I just haven't had that many calls for them yet. My top three list is a Nissan VI3 is number one.
Sure.
A Pico is going to be my number two, which I've got the Alltel 4 channel.
Okay.
So it kind of fills that goal there, that little hole.
Yeah, you can get by.
The number three is going to be probably the MDP from Chrysler.
Okay. Okay.
Because I'm still J2534 in the Chrysler.
Yeah, it's I know nice there's going to come factory. A time.
Yeah. Yeah, there's going to come a time where it's not going to work and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, but that brings up the next point, going mobile. Yeah, I probably came loaded more than some of our predecessors, but still, it's hard to have every tool.
Yeah,
and
there's always another tool. There's always something new. Slick.
Oh, give it time.
Hey, bought them all. Oh, well, this new one now.
Are we just phased this?
Yeah,
one
version
out?
Two.
It's not going to work anymore.
Yeah, you can't transfer your licenses.
Oh, I'm seriously waiting on about a year or two, and then Chrysler is going to go, yeah, Micropod 2. Yeah, they're dead.
Yep. We're in. Yep.
Just
whatever manufacturer makes something new. Nissan, for like, it's a separate $1,000+ subscription for console 4, you know. What are you gonna do? That's what they need.
Yeah, but I ran into this one today, and I don't know if you've had to deal with it much. I had a shop call me about programming a transmission on a Honda, and I was like, yeah, no problem. He told me that he had had two CVT transmission jobs from Nissan that he had turned away because the local dealer had been telling people when they bought brand new CVTs from them, it had to go back to the dealer to be programmed.
Mm-hmm.
So that was part of one of my phone calls today was talking with the service manager and the parts manager at the local Nissan dealership going, is this a Nissan USA policy or is this a your dealership policy? And come to find out, it was just the way they were, quote unquote, advising customers. And I'm like, yeah. Great. Well, thanks. You're taking a lot of money off of my table.
Right. Yeah, that's there's a few dealerships like that are trying to keep some stuff in house. There's a local Ford place. Maybe I shouldn't even say this in case people are listening, but if you buy a Ford part from them, like a control module, they will drive to your shop within a certain range and program it for free. So I miss out instantly on any of those Ford programmings. But, you know, yeah, well, I guess it's everybody has a right to, you know, try to capitalize on a market the way that they will. And we just have to find... It's up to us as business owners to kind of be savvy and not just rely on one thing. I think we should always be looking towards what's the next void that we're able to fill with our services, right? Because there is always going to be a next thing that's needed, that there's a gap in skill or parts or whatever it might be that, hey, we're intelligent, we're crafty, we can figure out how to take care of this problem. But you have to kind of look towards the future and see, you do your best to see what's coming and what's the next thing that I can provide a service for. Like for me, one of the things that I'm thinking about in the future, it's a big investment, so that's why I'm not jumping on it right away, is having a rescue charger for these hybrid battery packs, because I'm dealing with a hybrid specialty shop now, so slightly biased, because I'm seeing a lot though where these things get cranked down to the point where the battery drops below the usable percentage. And it's either you have a rescue charger, which are like 10 grand with the special connections for that particular manufacturer, or you buy a new battery or you rebuild it and that's it. Like you don't have another option. And in a lot of these cases, the battery wasn't even the problem. They had a motor that wouldn't start. They ran it out of gas. That happens. And they drain that battery down to the point where it won't crank anymore. Right. And so what do you do in that case? So my thought is, okay, I'll make the investment, 10 grand or whatever it is, for a rescue charger and get the connections. And now I charge you X amount of dollars to come out and charge this battery back up, just so that we can get to the point to actually diagnose the problem. But that's, I don't know, $500-$600. I'm just coming up with a number, but you'd be able to charge a premium rate because that's a hell of a lot cheaper than replacing the battery. So just an example, and feel free to steal that if you want to go buy a rescue charger. But that's the sort of thing, is like, what is going to be an obstacle for customers and shops in the future? And am I able to provide that service? Because, hey, does over the air programming take away, you know, my business there? Does remote programming take away my business there? It very well could, or at least take a big chunk of it. So am I just going to like sit back and, okay, I'm not going to do anything. No, let's try to look ahead and try to add some services. That's why I'm doing keys. That's why I'm doing ADOS. It's like I can pivot in different directions to keep my, you know, stay busy. is the base.
Well, like you said, you know, like we said, you got to kind of know your market, know your clientele. And that goes back to going mobile, is also knowing the laws of your areas. You know, us down here in Texas, we're dealing with key cutting laws and, you know, trying to figure out a way to get around those. I shouldn't say get around those, but, you know, work in the gray, as I should say.
Sure.
And figure out situations that way. I do know, and this is actually kind of funny. I live on a country road. About five doors down, I was pulling out one day, and here comes one of those Pro-Tec vans pulling out of a driveway. And I'm like, dude, my competitor lives five doors down. But this goes to not be an asshole. I've already gotten calls. He's already handed out my number to some shops on jobs he couldn't do. So,
yeah.
Yeah, you got to – just because – coming from a shop mentality, a lot of shops I worked in, they wanted to see every shop around them fail. Well, you in the mobile world, you almost need to hope a little bit that your competitor is going to succeed and that y'all can work together. Now, I'm not saying you should be buddy-buddy with your competitor and maybe not try and take some of his customers, but you shouldn't just be a jerk and like run the guy off the road either.
No, competition, as long as, you're not doing anything, you know, spiteful or shady, I don't think competition is a bad thing. I think done right, where both parties are trying to provide the best service possible, it can, if it's going to force you to improve what you offer, because, hey, look at John's mobile service over there. They're really making people happy with their service. They're doing a good job and they're making a lot of money. How can I do it at equal or better than John? What can I provide? And had John not been there, well, you don't necessarily have the motivation to improve. You're just like, well, this is what I do for them. And that's it. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. Now, of course, there's, you know, there's assholes out there.
Oh, yeah.
That's tough to deal with if you have one of those people, or you have people driving the price down, things like that.
Well, that sucks, I'll give you, but when I went mobile, I knew there was a shop in the next town over that did a lot of programming for the other shops. And I'd say half the people I gave out business cards to said, this one shop does their programming for them. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, you know, if I just kind of was like, well, do they come to you or how does that work? And I just had to sell the value in what I'm bringing to the table. You know, the fact they're not having to transport it over to them. And honestly, I thought that shop would get kind of mad at me until I started talking to them. And they kind of said, yeah, we've been doing the programming. We haven't had any competition in the area. We haven't had anybody else doing what you do. But honestly, we don't necessarily like doing programming. Because by the time we get to that one, you know, is our stuff up to date? What has changed? And next thing you know, I started getting a few phone calls from shops, and I would ask them, hey, where'd you get my number from? Oh, well, that shop gave them my number. Yeah. I was like, wow. Yeah. And so I actually started sharing some information with them. Like when the Ford servers went down, I called them up and just kind of said, hey, a little FYI, the Ford servers are down today. So if you see your technician out there trying to program a Ford and it looks like he's about to off himself, don't worry. It's not him and it's not your equipment. It's the servers.
Right.
And next thing you know, I think I've gotten a couple of phone calls from them about one of them was programming a Ford Apum. I was like, yeah, I'll take it on. Hate to tell you this, but there's a very risky modules to program. They tend to brick easy, and I can't give you a set price because I've seen them take 2 to 4 hours to program. So, and then they called me on a Honda also. But then I've had other shops. I'd be like, so where'd you get my number from? Oh, well, that shop gave it to us. So yeah. I really need to go take them a couple of dozen donuts one day.
Yeah, for sure. I try to take care of the good shops like that. But yeah, I can't tell you. There's been specific shops. It's a smaller world than you think that we live in. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many people and so many shops, but so many people know each other and run in the same circles, and shops talk to each other, shop owners, and people move from one place to another. And so if you do a good job and you're not a complete dickhead, your name will get passed around a lot, way more than you think. I mean, I've done a little bit of marketing. Like, I've handed out some flyers in attempts recently to, like, get some ADOS stuff and at the beginning. But the majority of my work has just been word of mouth. That's how I get more shops and more business, is doing a good job at one place and they recommend you to another. And so that would be the key for anybody who's just looking to, you know, spread the word. Is, yeah, you got to go shake some hands. You got to pound the pavement to get out there when you start. But the key is okay, well, once I get into a place, I do the best job that you can and, you know, be professional and friendly as much as it is reasonable. And you'll get your name spread around to the different shops. That's the way to do it.
Well, and at the same time, I mean, you look at the variables you can control. Price, I don't consider that a variable you can control, because you have certain overheads, you have certain expenses, you have certain things you got to cover. So your price is your price. Yeah. But what can I control? I can control the quality of the product I turn out, and I can control the timely manner I do it in. So the number one things I try and advocate to shops is, you know, yes, you can take it to the dealer, you know, spend that time doing that. Yes, you can take it to that shop that does all the programming for everybody. But the difference between me and them is I'm in and out in 24 hours. I do tell them eventually one day it's going to become 48, you know, but for right now, if you call me today, I'm scheduling you for tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I try and control the variables you can control. And Somebody told me one time before, you don't let outside influences affect your feelings, because you are the ones that can control your own feelings. I just used that same mantra when it came to business. It's like, okay, what variables can I control? Well, I can control the product. You know, I can do a shitty job or I can do a good job. That's all on me. Mm-hmm. And what's the other thing I can control? The convenience and time factor.
Yeah.
So try and focus. If you're new and you're just wanting to go out on this, control what you can control.
Yep. You can't control GM server, unfortunately.
No, gosh, no. And I still to this day, I mean, okay, I use Google every day. I've never once had to uninstall and reinstall Google. I use Microsoft. I use QuickBooks. Never once have I had to uninstall and reinstall it.
Yeah.
Why no is kidding. It every manufacturer software, when it doesn't work, it's uninstall and reinstall?
Oh man, that's a fantastic point, and I agree. Yeah, I've never had to take PowerPoint off of my computer before.
No, I came to that realization a few months ago. Whenever I forgot. I was doing at Christian Brothers, and it was I had to uninstall IDS and reinstall it. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, in all the computer program, even the computer games I played as a kid, I never had to uninstall and reinstall. Why is it OE manufacturing software? It's always uninstall, reinstall, and try again. How about today? One of my laptops went down. And I had to program a GM, but I didn't have everything set up on that one. So I just had to go the old school. I couldn't remember the password either. So I had to go in and just buy one VIN slot. And I was going through it, and I was like, this sure does feel a lot different. <It's> I even had to send a picture to my friends. I'm like, wait a minute, why is it doing this? And they're like, dude, close it and open it again. It might take you about 4 or 5 tries. Eventually, it'll go through. And I'm just like, oh, what's the GM hokey? Chrysler has a rolling pin. GM has a daily hokey pokey of what you got to do.
Yeah. Trust me. And it, what's funny is, depending on who you talk to, oh, just do it this way. You do it in this order and do this with a computer and it'll work just fine. And like, no, dude, I tried that. I tried the 4 other things and it still doesn't work. And
how about the other day in our private chat, somebody was having a GM problem. And I think I saw at least 5 or 6 guys chime in with how they do it. And all 5 or 6 of them were different. Yeah. Exactly. It's like, why does standing on your left foot touching your right ear before you hit enter work on your laptop, but on mine I have to stand on my head?
No, and then you whistle Dixie at the same time.
Yeah. it's like my MDI too. Occasionally I will get that thing to boot up and work just fine, and I will do the exact same thing on the next vehicle and it won't work, and I'm going, everybody's like, oh, well, I always do it like this on mine, and it's always worked. And I'm like, well, great. I just did it that way on mine, and it won't do it now, you know?
You need an old priest and a young priest.
Yeah. It makes me laugh. But, I mean, I think the other part that is kind of funny is I told you I wasn't ever a PC guy, and yet everywhere I go, I got 3 laptops, a tablet, and stuff like that. It's like,
yeah, I took a crash course in computers when I took on this job, because I was pretty base level. I could do a Google search and use Microsoft Word, and that was about it. And so now I'm like, not that I'm an expert on it, but I know so much more about it than I used to prior to this.
Well, I think so. I bought the VCM3 from Isaac. And I was just getting my IDS and FDRS set up, and I kept getting a JRE error. Like, I'm searching, I got people trying to help, and finally I just had to throw in the towel and reach out to somebody in particular. And he's like, oh, that's a Java error. And then, when you know, like a week or two later, I saw somebody post a picture, I'm getting this weird error. So I'm trying to, I'm like, oh, I know exactly what that is. It's a Java error. Well, how do you fix it? I don't know, but it's a Java error. That's what it means. I don't know. I had to get somebody else to help me too.
Call your friend.
Yeah. What it ended up turning was I had downloaded the wrong version of Java, and that's you know, aimless plug to Keith Perkins at L1 Diagnostics. If you want to get into programming and you have never done it, buy the membership, because I mean, what you would I like it when people go, it's just like loading, it's just like downloading any other program. <It's> like, none of these are like downloading any other program.
You put install Otis on your computer and tell me that you will disagree.
And, you know, and knowing ahead of time, I'll never forget, I got a call to do a Chrysler. I didn't have my Chrysler set up, of all things Chrysler. And everybody kept telling me, it's going to be about 48 hours. And I'm going, everything was done in 12 on everything else. And now this one's 48. And they're like, oh, wait till you get to Otis or Ista. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. So just be prepared for that kind of stuff. And
the fun never ends.
No, it goes... I used to tell people one of the things I loved about working on cars was once you figured out everything there is to know, next year model come out. Well, that works, except in programming, because in 2 weeks, the new version will come out of the software and you got to download it with fingers crossed that it's going to work. And pray to God, you have another laptop that has the old version on it, because the new one that just came out sucks.
Yeah.
Oh, Don told me in the beginning, he goes, you're going to learn to have backups to backups to backups. And I have since learned that, you know, three different laptops, advice. You know, even my business laptop has some programming stuff on it, ready to go just in case something happens to the other laptop or things like that. And the different programs that are out there, they never end. Once you understand the OE, well, guess what? There's these other aftermarket ones that can do stuff that the OEs can't do. And you're going to need this one for that job. And so it's a never ending battle. Like you said,
yes, sir.
I bought a used Isaac laptop, and I had to beg him one night to go spend 2 hours going through it, telling me what all the programs were. Cause I think I only knew what maybe 25% of the programs were on that laptop. I was like, what's this Orange 5? <It's> like,
yeah.
Stuff like that. But no, good stuff. Good stuff. Just the last tip I'll give any person thinking about doing this is do not get caught up in the romantic, sexy idea that a mobile guy sets his own rules and does whatever he wants. No. By the time you think you're your own boss, GM.
Yeah, exactly. GM owns you.
GM or Nissan.
Yeah. It's like you said, it is not all unicorns and rainbows. And so you got to be willing to embrace that. And if you can, I think it's worth it, but it's not for everybody. So definitely don't everybody listening to this in a shop quit your job tomorrow. You know, it is not for everybody. Just like working in a shop's not for everybody. This is the right job for some people. And so hopefully some of the stuff that we discussed this, you know, tonight, for somebody who's even thought about this can hear and say, yeah, that sounds like something that I would be willing to take on, or like, that all sounds terrible. Why do you guys do that every day? Okay, well, that, you know, the role in the shop's probably, you know, more suited for you, and there's a spot for everybody. So thanks for sharing your experiences. I'm excited to see where you go with this.
Thank you, Sean, and thank you for being part of my network.
Yes, sir.
All right, that's going to do it for today's episode. Thank you, Ben, for joining me. I really appreciate it. Also, like to thank everybody out there for listening and all the feedback I've been getting about the show. Hey, if you got an idea for something you'd like to see on the podcast, or you would like to be on the podcast, feel free to reach out to me. I'm on Facebook. Shoot me a message through Messenger, the best way to get a hold of me there. Otherwise, my email is also in the show notes. And hey, we'll figure it out. I'm always down to talk to interesting and passionate people in the industry. But with that all out of the way, let's get out there and start fixing the world. one car at a time.